Hello. Welcome to the Adventine podcast, Risk in Business. Today I'm joined by our commercial director, Ellie Hurst. Morning, Ellie.
Morning, Mike.
Today we're going to be cutting through the noise around the UK's defence spending uplift, or rather possible defence spending uplift. There's been a lot of rhetoric recently following the Prime Minister's speech in Munich. But the real-world implications for the UK defence sector may be very different from the headlines. So, without further ado, let's dive into it.
I don't know about you, but I was left wondering, well, is this just a political statement? Is there substantially anything any different that we're hearing in this speech than what we already knew? You know, does that mean that has the timeline been brought forward, or... You know, has anything really substantially changed? And I felt like no, really.
Well, I can't find myself but drawing a parallel to Monty Python's sketch. This calls for immediate discussion.
Discussion?
Yeah. And the reality is, when you drill down into the facts, and despite all of the urgency in Sir Keir Starmer's speech, there's no new money until 2027.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there's no new pledge. The original pledge of 2.5% of GDP by 2027 is the same pledge.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, the armed forces are still dealing with billions of in-year cuts, which means capability gaps, stockpile issues, pressures on the armed forces, and the support as well, because... what we've seen in the last couple of months as well are massive amounts of redundancies across civilian roles within the Ministry of Defence. So actually, there isn't an awful lot of investment going on. What there is an awful lot of trimming.
Yeah. So that was actually my next point or question when we first started talking about this was, you know, over the last few years, we've seen headcount drop. I've read somewhere something like 300 a day or 300 a week, a lot anyway, over the last few years of across the armed services. And that doesn't take into account the MOD, which has still got voluntary redundancies going on. So obviously slightly different in the armed forces, as in, you know, reduction of headcount. That needs to be reversed. But obviously that's like doing a bit of a 3-point turn in the Titanic, isn't it, really? If we're now saying, oh, no, scrap that. We don't want to do that anymore. So it's against a very difficult backdrop. And the issues that come out of, even if we take out the armed services and just talk about what happens at the MOD, so the operational end of trying to organise things, the skills that we are losing from MOD through voluntary redundancy, you know, what systems and platforms are going to end up actually being legacy because the people just simply aren't there to manage them anymore. And are we kind of sleepwalking into another set of crises?
Well, there's that, and there is the growing risk that comes from a security and resilience angle, in that we will continue to be running legacy systems for much longer. So we're running legacy systems well into 2027. And remember that that new money doesn't mean immediate change. That new money will be the investment for the change to happen. So the actual changes won't happen for some time after that again. So we're going to be running.
If we're talking about a really seriously shifting geopolitical situation now, and we're saying that the money isn't going to be available until 2027 to achieve this uplift that we're looking for, what happens in the intervening time, as we can see things are moving at a rapid speed, what do we do in the intervening time? How do we manage this?
Well, we're having to manage it, unfortunately, by doing more with less, which has been the message that we've had from successive governments for the last 20 years when it comes to defence and security.
And police.
And policing, and so many aspects of the things that are meant to keep our society safe and secure. So unless the policy changes, what we're actually saying is 2027 is the earliest when we will see an increase in procurement. So that means the earliest in which we will start to rebuild our munitions, our critical stockpiles, that we'll see any sort of industrial expansion on scale. So on the one hand, also, Starmer's speech is saying we must focus on national manufacturing base. And on the other hand, what he's saying is, but there's no money for us to support the national manufacturing base until 2027 at the earliest. So how are we going to continue to strengthen sovereign capability and supply chain resilience and a national manufacturing base when we know from events we went to all the way through 2025 that those same organisations are struggling from a lack of spending?
So these are key questions from the defence sector that need to go back to government, because assurances are required and a plan is required to get us over this period.
Absolutely.
What about supply chains?
Yeah, I think the challenge at the moment is that we still haven't seen the defence investment plan, which has been delayed since last autumn. So we don't have strategic clarity. It's difficult to see that the government is making risk-based decision-making. It's very difficult to see that they have got a security mindset embedded into their everyday decision-making and future operations. And all of those things are absolutely critical to national defence. You know, Russia is rearming now.
Yes.
Europe is rearming now.
Yes.
And we are not going to rearm until 2027. And I can't help but feel, if we look at the history books, that we've been here before.
Yes. And this is against backdrop. I mean, the MOD has actually been quite ahead of the curve in our world when we talk about assurance. But it's so the introduction of secure by design instead of accreditation has been something that the whole sector is now becoming aware of. The change in that methodology is moving down through the tiers of defence manufacturers and suppliers. All of this is trying to happen at the same time. Do you think that breathing space between now and 2027 might actually do that a bit of a favour, or do you think that it's going to be too much all happening at the same time?
I think the potential is that we will get to a precipice and then there will be too much happening all at the same time. I can understand what the government's trying to do, which is all about policy alignment and strategic approach and having a proper investment plan, which the MOD have not been great at in the past. There's been lots and lots of different investments going on, duplication of effort, overrunning projects, massive overspends. But that is at the expense of procurement growth and building a defence foundation in order for us to keep pace with those other countries like the EU, like Russia, to face that growing geopolitical threat that we face.
And
that means continued operational strain across the armed forces, of course, because they're continuing to have to do, you know, we've just seen we're going to double the number of forces in Norway. We're going to send aircraft carrier group to the far north. You know, we're making all these promises. We're going to put boots on the ground should there be a peace deal in Ukraine. Well, where are all this manpower and equipment and munitions and everything else going to come from when we already know that we're struggling for all of those things right now?
Yes. Yes. And as we've just said, you know, there doesn't seem to be a plan in place that we can see and understand to correct that in the timescale that it needs to be done in.
And that has a wider wider impact on some of the things that we talk about a lot as well, which of course is the impact of cybersecurity in defence, because that deferred spending also means no new spending on defence cybersecurity, not just on munitions. Keir Starmer called for more European, NATO and deeper UK-EU defence collaboration. But at the same time, we're facing an enhanced cybersecurity threat, not just a physical war threat mm-hmm. with disinformation designed to undermine Western values, increases in cyber attacks and cyber sabotage designed to disrupt, not just at a high end Ministry of Defense level, but designed to disrupt daily life. Mm-hmm. And Russian digital interference intended to cause deeper economic pressures as well.
Yeah.
So,
and all of these things have been running for quite some time. You know, this is not, none of this yeah. is new. There's no, it's a bit like the speech. There's nothing new substantially yeah. happening.
And that threat landscape is accelerating all the time whilst our defence capability is being paused. And that mismatch, mm-hmm. I feel, increases cyber risk across a whole range of areas. We've talked about legacy systems. Legacy systems are going to remain exposed for longer because delayed investment means that they can't accelerate modernisation, invest in new systems, replace ageing operational platforms, upgrade outdated security architecture. You know, there's a whole load of stuff in there. We know these mm-hmm. things exist, and yet we don't have the investment to be able to plug those gaps. And you know, we talk about, you know, there's operational technology, aging weapon systems. So the cyber threat is not just to our core IT, it's to the whole of our defense infrastructure.
Absolutely. And, you know, think about the bits that are connected as well, which brings us on to, you know, supply chain and ecosystem threat as a result of that. And, you know, inconsistent levels of cyber maturity. You know, well, there's any number of things. I mean, that's a podcast all in itself, isn't it? The threat to the defense supply chain and ecosystem. But you know, what are your thoughts?
I think we run the danger of intensifying the potential for supply chain fragility generally. Mm-hmm. You know, no defense company is going to be putting money up front on promises. So that means that the whole of our defense ecosystem can't scale their whether it's their manufacturing capability or their cyber capability or wider resilience programs at the level needed until that money becomes available.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody's going to be delaying security upgrades. We run the risk of inconsistent cyber maturity. You know, think of the scaling between at one end of the scale the primes and at the other end of the scale some of the micro SMEs that sit in that supply ecosystem. Yeah. And meanwhile, they're introducing increasing cost governances with the new DCC that's been introduced, which is a cost that organizations are going to have to soak up front. All of this is putting pressure on that ecosystem, and that will make, I think it'll make us more susceptible to nation state supply chain exploitation. I think that's what I think. And we know that Russia is using cyber attacks and sabotage across all of our industrial base. So they're not just targeting high-end government and high-end MOD. They're targeting all sorts of organizations of all sorts of sizes within that ecosystem.
Which is just the logical thing to do, really, when you think about it. So you're not going to storm the castle keep, are you? Try and find the kitchen window that's open.
Meanwhile, we talked about the massive layoffs that the MOD are doing and the continuing lack of investment in numbers within the military. So we've got that potential for those skill gaps to worsen and for those skill gaps to increase, even just within my own profession. Skill gaps for cyber professionals are being talked about all the time. Cyber professionals are in global demand. And that means that within the UK, upskilling delays are going to continue and recruitment pipelines are going to shrink.
Mm-hmm.
So the potential is that the talent will go elsewhere. And talent has, you know, we have seen people moving to Europe, moving to the US. They go where the salaries are. You know, let's be blunt about it.
It feels, from everything that we've talked about here, it does feel like a perfect storm, and one would hope that these issues and challenges and threats have already been considered by government, because one of the things that concerns me, on top of all of the things that we've talked about that concern me, is that gap in funding. We know the impact the cash flow can have on smaller businesses that are supplying some of the bigger businesses that sit in very important places in that supply chain, as providers of capabilities into MOD. We also know that some of them are highly specialised, and, you know, margins can exist on a knife edge for them. And we have to hope that that doesn't endanger those future capabilities as an unintended consequence of this delay that could have a massive impact further down the line into what actually gets delivered into our armed forces.
Yeah. And meanwhile, of course, we can't have a podcast on this subject without bringing in the subject of our cousins across the pond and the level to which we can rely on them and trust them to continue to support us, to fund us, and to come to our aid in times of crisis. We've seen just in the last couple of weeks, AUKUS having a coach and horses driven through the middle of it, with the US saying, actually, we don't think we will give you the nuclear submarines, Canada. We'll keep the nuclear submarines and you build bases for us to operate out of. Well, that wasn't what AUKUS was set up to do.
No, it's not. Well, it's the same as many things emanating from that particular source. It's a movable feast constantly, and very hard to predict. I don't see any reason why we would have less concern than Canada when it comes to being able to rely on the US.
And yet we've plowed a massive amount of investment.
As we have done traditionally.
Yeah, and yet we've plowed a massive amount of investment in the last couple of years into US technology, aircraft. We're heavily reliant on the US and the US supply chain for future operational capabilities, for example, with the F-35s.
Yes, so we live in interesting times, and this is a very complex and convoluted situation.
It is.
As convoluted as the geopolitical situation, just what we've unpacked from, from one speech.
Indeed.
Really quite unnerving.
I do wonder if this is the start of a seismic change to what NATO looks like and a move towards a more European-centric NATO with much less US involvement in future years. And I know that the naysayers and the Brexiters and the UK first listeners will shoot me down for saying this, but perhaps we do need to accept that we need much greater UK-EU defence integration.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, and, you know, that didn't... Something being a fact doesn't mean that you have to like it, to anybody who would shoot you down for that, I would say. Bring a viable alternative to the table then, and let's talk about that.
Absolutely.
If that's the case. Yeah.
We live in interesting times. I think I would sum this up by saying that preparedness beats optimism every time. And whilst Sir Keir's speech was absolutely dripping in optimism and positivity and yay, yay, let's all go and invest, actually the reality is that we're going to continue to be facing a funding shortfall for at least another year or more.
Yeah.
Resilience, we know from everything we do here at Advent IM, is built on preparedness, not promises.
Mm-hmm.
It takes time. Investment and willingness to act early is absolutely vital if we're going to build defence resilience, whether that is in national defence or in cyber defence. And I think that we need to be building this resilience long before the crisis, not during it. That's what I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Feels like, as we started at the beginning, it's a purely political speech. And in terms of the plan for defence to cover this chasm between the two areas doesn't seem to have been considered at all. And I find that quite unnerving.
No. So I think the Prime Minister's message at Munich was pretty clear. Europe is facing an increasingly volatile security environment, driven in no small part by Russia's aggression and expansionist ambitions. Hybrid interference and the accelerating rearmament are leaving us in a very volatile and dangerous position. And at the same time, our stockpiles are being depleted by support to Ukraine without being replenished. Our industrial capacity can't scale without confirmed long-term funding. We know, personally, as a business, and more anecdotally from lots of other businesses we talk to, that lots of procurements remain delayed or deferred, and workplace and the skills pipeline cannot expand at pace at the moment. So we're facing mm-hmm. a strategic environment that demands immediate action, but a budget profile that means meaningful delay.
Yes.
And I find it difficult to see how we're going to balance those two in a world where, at the same time, defence experts are saying we should prepare for war with Russia within a decade.
Mm-hmm. Like I say, it's a perfect storm of horribleness, stuff that you really don't want to be happening, and trying to manage all at the same time. Definitely. An awful lot of things happening at the same time.
Well, this has been the Advent IM podcast, Risk and Business. Please reach out to us and let us know your thoughts on this subject. I know we have a lot of listeners within the defence industry. Please do get in touch. And if you would like to participate in future podcasts, or there's a particular area that you think we should be covering, then let us know. I've been Mike Gillespie, Chief Executive of Advent IM, and I've been joined today by Ellie Hurst, Commercial Director. Thanks, Ellie.
Thanks, Mike.
Don't forget to like and follow to make sure that you don't miss any future episodes of the Advent IM podcast, Risk and Business. For now, goodbye.